Welcome to the Unshakable Principle Podcast. I'll be your host, Saeed, and with me is my co-host, Aurangzeb Sohail. We'll be discussing the business principles that have stood the sands of time.
Welcome to the Unshakable Principle Podcast. We'll be discussing the book, 12 Rules of Life by Dr. Jordan B. Peterson. If you've been amidst the whole social media hype of Dr. Jordan Peterson, he's been very vocal on issues like secularism, I guess. Not entirely sure, but he's pretty vocal on people on entitlement as such, and really the fact that finding meaning and the fact that he got popular over his whole argument over social media against certain minority groups over something that things that shouldn't really exist in society. I'm not exactly clear about that. Anyhow, you can Google that.
But, let us begin.
Okay. So, starting off with his first rule that humans are organized in hierarchies, which means that there is a pecking order that is determined in society. There is a dominance, and the more dominant we are, the more serotonin we produce, and the less dominant we are, the more octopamine we produce. He basically tied up our physical reactions and how we behave in society to the biological aspect of it and what kind of enzymes are produced in people who are in who are dominant in society and people who tend not really perform well in society. Yeah.
What the rule actually was over here, stand up straight with your shoulders back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
Stand up straight with your shoulders back, yeah. So,
yeah.
He basically goes through the analogy of a lobster, starting off with the book of how even the male lobster is somewhat comparable to human beings in their actions in the dominance realm. So how they're basically able to
dominate. Just like adding on to that, because like I feel like that will be integral to your argument as you move forward. So one of the things with lobsters is that lobsters are one of the most oldest organisms that have survived, and the fact is that Dr. Jordan B. Peterson uses them as an example because they're kind of like relatable to our primal instincts and how we behave with it. We will go into this further as we progress into the book, but like how our instincts are matched
Exactly. So how they're related to human beings is a very quite similar, right? When faced with an opponent bigger, when faced with an opponent bigger, they will tend not to shy away if they know that they're capable or if there's a female involved, right? So this basically rule focuses on and how we as humans should dominate in our hierarchy by not giving in way of pressure and basically when we face adversity or an opponent who's bigger, mightier than us, we should not shy away. We should stand up with our shoulders back and present ourselves in such a way that shows us that we have a purpose. We have a certain goal that we need to achieve in life.
Mm-hmm. So this was basically one of the things that was mentioned in this was the fact that humans are really self-deprecating of sorts. Mm-hmm. And I think that ties into one of the other rules that he mentions later on. But for this, he was just like, stand up for what you believe in. Don't shy away because of the pecking order or not entirely, but like it was just like he just goes through the dynamics of how lobsters behave in their society and what really happens to lobsters as they go through their cycle of finding love and all those other aspects that life gives us and them.
Sure.
And yeah, that was the first rule, I think, to sum it up.
Yeah.
Starting off with the second rule. The second rule is not entirely sure what the rule is. And
I have it on me. It's treat yourself like someone you are responsible for helping.
Treat yourself as someone you're responsible for helping. And this really ties up into something that I was telling you guys before, that as human beings, we're really self-deprecating over the fact that we treat ourselves so bad that we wouldn't treat anyone else if we were responsible for anyone else in a similar situation. We treat them much better. So we might not cook food for ourselves, but if someone were to come over, or if you're just taking care of, if you have any experience with kids or at all, if you're taking care of a kid, you treat them pretty darn well in comparison to your own situation that you put yourself through.
Yeah, and he basically goes deep in describing how we as humans need to take care of ourselves, like, and feel like it's a responsibility to take care of ourselves, right? He goes in a lot of detail in describing how we tend to keep ourselves vague and foggy, because that's better than bearing the burden of responsibility and having an actual meaning to life. So the essence was, you should take care of yourself as someone you're responsible for, right? Because you treat others way more better than you treat yourself, as you mentioned. And so what if we could start applying the same treatment to our own selves? Like, because we all know it, we are not going to we're not going to do what we tell ourselves we're going to do, right? Because that's what we are, who we are by nature. But what if we actually started to do what we started, what we tell ourselves to do, right? So like, if we tell ourselves we should study by now, and if we actually carried out the task and be done with it, we will be free to do other things that have more impact on our lives, right? To pursue something even more meaningful than that. But first, you need to get that task out of the way, like cleaning your room, and not avoid them. You have to take responsibility. So that's another step to mitigate and eliminate chaos from life. Like, take responsibility.
Yeah. It's really interesting, because like, I feel like if you really go into the crux of this, it's the fact that a lot of people would give advice. So, like, if hypothetically, if we give advice to someone else about something in their life, about how they should be taking care of themselves, if they should be working out, what kind of like foods they should be eating, or what kind of like work they should be doing to get to a place where they want to be at, and you see them giving this good advice to other people, but when you see their own lifestyle, it ends up being the fact that they don't really take care of themselves the way they know they're supposed to. So if they were to actually apply the values and the advice that they give to other people into their own life, into their own lives, it will make a hell of a difference.
Exactly, because you as a human being, you try to help out your friends, right? You try to offer them advice. You try to reach out to them. But how many times do we actually try to reach out to our inner self, right? Like looking ourselves in the mirror and really having accountability towards that. You don't do that because it's tough. It's much more harder. But if you want to progress through life, this is an essential step that that cannot be just, you know, ignored. So, yeah.
And this is just through Dr. Jordan Peterson's eyes. This isn't like a final verdict, or like obviously you can form your own rules for life and stuff. Because one of the things that I'm tying back to a book that I read from Ray Dalio, Principles, is the fact that going through these principles might help you develop principles that work for you. Because sometimes I don't know, this rule might not work for you. I can't really think of a situation right now, but you feel me?
Yeah. Because to each his own, right? But at the end of the day, this book was designed to help people eliminate chaos from their lives and get their lives back in order. So if this is coming from a man who has implemented these such rules and actually condensed them into 12, which were actually 50. So there is some wisdom in such. Moving on.
Touché, my friend.
Rule number three. Rule number three. Make friends with people who want the best for you. Oh, an important one, right?
Important one. Gives me goosebumps.
What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, like, the cliche quote that you tend to hear is that if you want to be a lion, you gotta train with lions, right? This is something that's just like stuck with me through the years, and it's kind of like, you know, the more competitive environment you put yourself in, the better you become. The kind of like people you have in your surrounding. If the people in your surrounding are lazy, you're gonna get those habits. It's like one of the other quotes that I remember, and I'm sorry, but I'm a quote guy, but birds of a feather flock.
Yeah.
Right? So if you hang out with losers, you're gonna be a loser. And I ain't trying to go into that motivational vibe, but you know, you feel me?
Yeah, so the thing is, it's actually harder to surround yourself with people who want the best for you, because everyone is selfish by their own means, and no one really cares about what you want to pursue or helping you level up. They just want to progress in their own hierarchies and in their own lives, right? So you need to find such friends who actually force you to level up with them, right? Who look out for you, who you can depend on in times of adversity. And it's not easy finding good friends, right? But we've heard this thing over and over again, right? You should surround yourself with, you're actually the average of the five people. That's like the world famous quote. Everyone's quoting it, but that thing is actually true, right? So I think this exemplifies in this rule that you should surround yourself with good people, right? So who don't lower your self-esteem.
I was just like thinking, with the amount of quotes that we put into our podcast, we should just start a podcast that's like
quote podcast. Yeah, we should do that, right? And expand on each.
Yeah, but just like diving deeper into this point, one of the things is that with finding good people that actually want the good for you, The thing that really limits us in this scenario is the fact that people really don't like to hear the truth at times, right? We would much rather be in the comfort of people supporting us with our excuses and sugarcoating
things. Yeah, sugarcoating things for us. Mm-hmm. I agree with this. Sorry, go on.
No, go on, go on.
This actually is tied up in this book I'm currently listening to, right? The David Goggins ones, where he says that you don't want to hang out with that type of friend that says, it's raining outside, it's perfect time to go out for a run. No, you want to hang out with a person that says, oh, it's raining outside, let's just order pizza and stay inside and watch movies. So you see, that's the difference. You need to surround yourself with people who actually care about you, and their success is tied up to your success. So once you have a common goal, you can strive towards such.
Yeah, it's just like people who are going to push you to be a better version of yourself. Yes. And finding them is hard in the sense that, like, I feel like everybody knows people in their circle, or they can find people even within their friend circle who have a certain mindset, who were able to offer them advice or were able to push them to make them a better person. But just as human beings, we're lazy creatures. That's why we developed the internet, and that's why programmers just do stuff that makes stuff easier for ourselves, so we can be more lazy. But
here's the thing, right? We know deep inside that the friends we are hanging out with are not benefiting us, or they actually know who to go to get the right advice and pursue such people. They know who the right people are. They're just not willing to put in the effort and basically change their old habits, because changing habits is hard. And people want to take shortcuts. End of story.
Change is rough.
Yes, change is rough. That's a good end to rule number 3. Change is rough.
Yeah. One of the things that I want to end this rule with is a really good parable that I wrote down from the book. That if you wouldn't want someone to be a friend of your dad or your mom or your sister, why is he your friend? You self-deprecating genius. So this was just like a note to myself. This is just like an analysis of the same thing that we discussed in an earlier one, in the previous rule, actually, where we're treating ourselves as someone who we are responsible for. It's just like a relationship or anything, but you get the point.
That's a good parable, because that's kind of self-explanatory as well, so I won't go
always move forward.
Compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to someone else.
I'm gonna let you start this with a quote that you posted on your Instagram, and
I was about to quote that.
Jim Wicks liked your picture, and then you went viral.
No, I didn't actually go viral, but I like to think so too. So the quote is, "The grass is always greener on the other side," right? So you just start watering yours. That's the only way that you will turn greener.
However much you look at it, it's still gonna be green, and your grass isn't gonna work unless you're gonna like water it. So
you gotta put effort into bettering yourself every day, right? Compare yourself to who you were yesterday. So if yesterday you went and studied for an hour, try studying for 10 more minutes today, right? Rather than comparing yourself with someone who studies 4 hours every day, right? Eventually you will reach the 4 hour mark, but you'll have to do it minute by minute, right? So 10 minutes each day, even if you do a minute each day extra, it's going to compound, right? So, so it's basically consistent. I'm done.
Okay. Along with me ranting some more, but I feel like the way our society is structured, it's and the way the current way with social media makes us so connected and so in tune with the lives of our peers and our relatives and all of that stuff. There's a lot of parables going on where it's just like comparing him to him, him to him, him to her, or whatever. And just the fact that people are always looking at someone else for, I don't know, just to see what they're doing, to try and do something else. Or they're just like looking at someone else's success, not really realizing the success that they're achieving on their own. So it's kind of like ends up being, because as human beings, we have limited time and we have limited energy, which we can spend on certain things, right? And ultimately, what we don't realize at the end of the day is that our goal and their goal might be different, and they might have gone through a lot more than what you just see. And that's where people just end up in that mentality where they're just like looking at the other person's grass and seeing, oh, it's so green, it's so green. Yet
I wish I had that.
What?
Yeah, they start going like, I wish I had those things. I wish I had this car. I wish I... You know, there's like this famous thing on Facebook that keeps popping up every often, every now and then, where there's this guy with a helicopter and there's a guy with a Lamborghini and says, I wish I had that. And next to him is a guy with a Honda. He says, I wish I had the Lamborghini. And then the one with the bicycle goes like, I wish I had that car. And then the one who's just walking on the street says, I wish I had that bicycle. And then at the end, there's this person sitting on his terrace on his wheelchair. And he say, wow, he has legs and he can go wherever he wants. So
It's like all about like,
yeah.
Greed's something that you're always going to want more. And at the end of the day, as long as you're working towards a better version of yourself, you're winning because you're feeding your own grass. And
you start by doing things and you complete them and then you keep moving because who knows about the future? The best way to predict is a great one, right?
What's up?
The best way to create the best way to know about the future is to create it, right?
Yeah. Very much. Carve it out with your own hustle. Ain't about that luck shit. But one of the quotes that I really found interesting in this specific chapter was, perhaps happiness is found in the fleeting journey uphill and not the fleeting sense of satisfaction waiting at the peak.
Yes. And it's the journey, right? Because I like this thing where people usually go like, successful people actually go like that. If they were given that much money in an instant, they wouldn't like respect it or they wouldn't appreciate it that much. But if they work towards a certain amount of money and they actually achieve it over a span of 5 to 10 years, then they get to appreciate it. They know what it's worth, right? They know the hours that it took to get that, to get to that stage. So, it's about the journey. Awesome quote.
Yeah, it's also like when we look at life and when we look at events that have occurred. So, like when you had an exam or something, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that's like really interesting is the fact that the whole journey leading up to that exam is this time that we're all like working towards a goal, like anything in life in general. When we're working towards it, that's going to be where we're going to spend the most of our energy at, and the most of our time is going to be spent on working towards that task or working towards that goal. Mm-hmm. And once you achieve that goal, it's only like, it only takes like a fraction of that time. And really, I feel like most people just have that sense that, okay, once they get to a certain place, they're gonna make it, or they're gonna feel a different way, or, and obviously, like, you feel a different way once you achieve something, right? But there's always the next step as well. But they're so miserable during the journey, right? People are like, no, I don't want to do this, that and that. And I feel like that's really a bad mentality to have when you're towards something.
So if we actually compare this to eliminating chaos, because that's what the whole book is about. So seeing how this rule actually ties up to eliminating chaos. So if there's chaos in your life, nothing's in order. Instead of looking at your neighbor whose life is all set, you could start by doing this.
Sorry to interrupt you, but like, just for reference, because the audience doesn't really know about chaos and what's the other one? Order. Just like, kind of like, just give them a quick introduction into it.
Yes. So chaos and basically establishing order in your life is one of the main things that Jordan Peterson focuses on, right? It's revolved around doing the simple tasks that can create a bit more clarity in your life. Like if everything's going wrong in your life, right? If you're financially and emotionally unstable and broken, and your social life is messed up, so that would like make it a sort of situation where it's represented by chaos, right? Like nothing is in order, right? So what you could start doing is by start doing the little thing first. Because normally, and we'll go into this next rule, like you shouldn't criticize, which is about criticizing the world when your own life isn't in order. But that's the main thing, right? You need to get your own life in order first. So basically the inward mind, if it's messy, that's manifested in outside. So chances are, if you're emotionally unstable, if you're financially having trouble reaching your goals, or you're a social misfit, there's a high chance that your room's very dirty, there's nothing in order, you're disorganized, and all that sort of stuff, right? So eliminating chaos would start off by fixing one of those things, just taking one thing, and then basically as a worker or a stonemason, like clipping the stone, or how do I say this? Sculpting the stone daily, right? Hammering it daily, so it starts to take shape. So that's like putting
daily, day in, day out. You start one day with you weighing 200 pounds.
Exactly. So health is another one, right? You weigh 200 pounds. You aren't gonna get fit overnight, right? And it's no use looking at your neighbor who has a 6-pack ab. Right? Mm-hmm. He worked for that, unlike you. So what you should start doing is you should start walking. Just put on your jogger and start running. Or as a famous Jordan Peterson quote, clean your damn room first. Because if you get that right, it's basically, he says, if you get a couple of things right, it creates momentum. So life is about creating momentum. You need to get those small accomplishments in to get the flow running, and then you can move on to the bigger task. Because the bigger task is going to be much more adverse. And if you fail on that, you likely fall in a deeper pit and not going to recover from that. So it's better to take on the small wins that create the momentum going, and then you can create a bigger win. So
micro wins to be the macro.
Yeah, to the macro wins, yeah.
Yeah. And just like summing that up, I don't know. Let's just move on to the next one.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much summed up.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. What's rule number 5? Rule number 5 is do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. Mm-hmm. But this was a long chapter, right?
All right, so disclaimer, starting off with like rules in the later side of this book, this book started out great with like all it talks about philosophy and how you can change your life and stuff, but I feel like
it also talks about old stories, right?
What's
that? It also talks a lot of, he also talks a lot of all old stories, right? Like Adam and Eve, and he goes into deep of the story of the of how they got out of the
paradise. Jordan Peterson really like dives deep into biblical stories and
like really dive deep.
He like goes in scholar level interpretations of
and you actually start missing the point until he comes back and links it to in some sort of way of a story, right?
And I feel
but
like
for our sorry.
Yeah, but I didn't read through the whole book, but I just felt like the later chapters were a bit more all over the place, and you had trouble like staying on track with them. But
I actually listened to everything. I actually listened to this in audio format, right? So I went through the whole thing, and it took me around, I don't know, more than a week, because I don't know in real terms. So
it's hard to keep up.
But the thing, we're basically, the whole point of this podcast is to summarize in such a way that you can implement it actually in your daily lives, so you actually get some benefit out of it. Like, we can't possibly discuss the whole biblical stories, and because that's not going to make sense. You've got to read the book. But if you take the words of this podcast and start implementing those, which is in essence what the book is, you'll have a much more better understanding when you actually read the book itself.
We're just dudes out here spitting fire, spitting some knowledge bombs that you
knowledge.
But if you want it, you got it. If you don't want it, peace out, brother. We're still putting out still. Anyhow. Yeah.
Rule number 5, do not let to do anything that makes you dislike you, that makes them dislike you.
So starting off, I'll just like kind of like go through certain of the main points that were in this chapter. So children need to be disciplined in order for them to get
about the social norms.
Get a clue about social norms. So he really dives deep into how children are wild animals when they're born, and they're really influenced and they're really disciplined into certain norms and how society works, or else they might just end up eating with their foot or something. I don't know. A lot of this behavior from childhood is translated into the future. So when children are really growing up, they're really susceptible to a lot of the behavior that they see around them. So this is what I've been seeing. So like, children don't really know abusive words or curse words when they're born, but like when they see them being shouted out by their parents, or they see them being shouted out in school or something, that's how they learn. Because like initially they're all born pure as a source, with, if you consider that pure. But anyhow, like even the abusive behavior or any kind of like habits that they might develop, maybe even their, I don't know, like most of the things that, most of their interactions and how they interact are learned from how they see their parents interacting. So this is where he just says that a lot of childhood, a lot of the things that they experience in their childhood is translated when they grow up. So they are still influenced by the behaviors that they've seen during their childhood. So childhood trauma. Use something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So what you need to, so what you actually need to do is, like you said, you need to set rules for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you don't have to be super strict. You have to make deals with them, like with the minimum punishment. So if they do something wrong, you got to tell them that it's wrong. So mm-hmm. unless they know the difference between right and wrong, because we as humans, we have been given a will, right? We have the ability to discern between right and wrong. That's what makes us human. And the ability to know what is right and what is wrong is actually in itself a huge blessing. So mm-hmm. it becomes our sort of a moral duty to tell people, tell children, our children, this is wrong. This has punishment. This, your actions have consequences. So this one actually goes into a, so this rule actually goes into a, like a disciplinary measure sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
this really dives deep into like parenthood and how you should be treating your children. Or
I couldn't relate this. I couldn't relate this much because, yeah, I didn't find this really much useful.
So I was able to translate a lot of advice to my parents and stuff, even though they're not the one raising them, but obviously they can translate some wisdom to my
okay. Rule number 7, pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient.
Yep. So
shall I begin with this? Should we end this with this rule? Should we end with this rule and then continue with the later on? Because this, or do you want to do this whole thing? Because that's a lot of rules, right? We're on rule 7. I think we should split it
into 2 podcasts.
Yeah.
I feel like we can go over them because, like, I feel like we're summing up the later podcasts into the later rules into smaller and smaller sections.
Because... Yeah, so just so they're more implementable. All right, so yeah, pursue what is meaningful. So basically, stoicism, right? Pursuing what is meaningful. So like, it's an act of stoicism, right? You're sacrificing the current temptations and the pleasures for something better in the future, right? And that's interesting because you look for eventual goodness in your life, and you have to.
You have hope.
You have hope, actually. Yeah. You have hope that you're hustling. And so you basically continue to hustle, continue to put in the work because you're pursuing what is meaningful at the end. Like, along the way, the devil's going to distract you, right? He's going to try to give you shortcuts. But that's not the way of stoicism. Stoicism, as opposed to Epicurean, are people who focus on the long term than the short term gratification, right?
Mm-hmm.
So... the expedient only works for the current moment. It's the immediate impulse, the immediate gratification. And but pursuing what is meaningful in life actually gives your life a sense of purpose. And tying it into chaos, if you have a purpose that you're striving for, the chaos won't bother you much, right? Because you know where you're headed, right? You have a compass, you have a direction. And you know that it's going to make up, it's going to be up of those moments that actually lead up to that final destination, regardless of consequences, because that's the price you pay for pursuing that path.
Yep. And it's just thoughts? Like everything that's expedient is really, really in the moment, and you don't really have any certainty of the future in general. So, like, something that's meaningful to you will always be meaningful to you, of sorts. Because since it's like in the distance, like I said before, you're still gonna keep hustling towards it, and you're still gonna have that hope that it's eventually gonna make it. But something that's expedient only works for a certain amount of time, and then you know it's not gonna work anymore, right? Like, I don't have a good example for this. Something like a diet for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something like that, people are just going, or even with the current stay with of Ramadan, where Muslims are fasting and they think they're going to lose a lot of weight during Ramadan. And they're like, okay, we're fasting, we're going to lose a lot of weight this month. But it's only expedient. Ramadan only lasts like 30 days. After that, it's done. They're going to get back to their same old habits, and then they're going to get fat and feel the same way.
Yeah, but if you keep a long-term goal and pursue a meaningful way of life, for example, you say, oh, all right, I'm not in good shape. I need to get in shape. I need to get my health back in order, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way I could do this is basically avoid immediate gratification, like remove the junky foods that I have in my house and really start exercising on a daily basis. And this is again tied up to rule number 4, was it? Right? Being better, comparing yourself to who you were yesterday than the other person, right? So
I really love how this podcast, we're tying up the whole book and we're tying up different sections and showing how all of this really like maps down to one thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But summing that up, one of the other rules, summing just this one up, we already summed it up, but it's just that stoicism and pursuing something meaningful that's way off in the distant future rather than something that you're going to work on as a project for the now, as of now, I guess. Anyhow.
Oh, I think we skipped a rule, right?
Yeah, these ones just swapped up. So that was the previous one.
So basically rule 6 was setting your house in perfect order before you criticize the world. So this was like consumed like half of the pages in the book as compared to one of the longer chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And this really means was that before you point fingers to anyone, you need to assume, you need to make yourself be perfect first, right? Because no one is perfect. So instead of pointing fingers and saying things to others that you know they are doing wrong, why don't you first set your own life in order, and then you have the right to criticize others. But which is hardly the case, right? People's own lives are not in order, and they start going on criticizing the world and what's wrong. So they're not meeting their own goals, and they're complaining about the climate change or global warming. Yeah, that's an issue you could talk on, but you have no right to say that people are behaving the way they are, because you're not behaving the way you are. You're not doing what you tell yourself you're going to do, right? So who are you to actually?
It's like someone who's fat or someone who doesn't really, I'm not body shaming or anything like that, but someone who's really not taking care of their health themselves is telling other people to take care of their health. So someone who's
You're a walking contradiction.
You're a walking hypocrite.
So yeah, before you criticize others, learn to make your life in order, which is hardly the case, as I've already mentioned. So yeah, an important rule: before you point fingers, point one at yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the instances in this specific chapter that really holds a lot of meaning in my life right now is that don't do anything that you know you shouldn't be doing. So this was really interesting to me, because like a lot of the times you're just doing something, there's one habit in your life that you know you shouldn't be pursuing, and you just keep on doing that habit again and again, and eventually it just ends up, I don't know, feeding a mindset that's really detrimental to your future.
Yeah.
And really just like observing the habits. Like I have a habit of drinking a lot of soda, and this is just like something that's inbuilt in me since my teenage years, because I used to drink a lot of soda. But I know I shouldn't be drinking it, right? Because of the way that it affects my teeth, the way that affects my bones and stuff, and all of the other disadvantages that you can find up on YouTube and Google if you want. Yeah. But yeah, this was something that I really wanted to share. But
Awesome.
Moving on to rule 8.
Rule 8. Telling the truth. Tell the truth, or at least don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, this is the big one.
So we actually
spent some time on this rule. He described how people in their everyday dealing should not lie, and
mm-hmm.
or at least say something that is close to the truth, right?
Right.
So speak the truth. I'm just reading off some of the notes here.
All good.
Can you give me a hand?
Okay. Speak the truth and it's better than
messing up your whole life.
It's better than messing up your own life on the basis of putting out temporary fires and creating a bigger fire. Meaningful and not what's expedient. Tying it back, because that's what we do.
Rule number 7. Tying it back into. It's when you lie, you keep adding fuel to the fire, right?
Mm-hmm. You're actually delaying the inevitable of sorts.
Yeah. So telling the truth is always wins, right? Because if you tell the truth and you're honest and you don't lie, life is gonna be much more easier for you, right? You don't have to remember a lot of stuff. You don't have to remember what you said.
Sorry to interrupt you, but could you turn off your video, because I think that's messing up our the quality of our podcast.
Done.
My bad. All right, continue.
Right. So if you're honest and you don't have to remember a lot of stuff, right? Because when you say the truth or when you tell the truth, there's no point in remember what you said, because if it's the truth, it's going to remain the same. You don't have to change your story every time. So it becomes easier to manage life and go through life, right? And people are going to know you for it, trust you for it, right? It's one of the qualities that you'll be admired for, and because no one likes a lying person. And if you're caught lying, then your whole reputation goes to shambles.
Yeah. So, yeah, with the whole fire thing where you're just delaying the inevitable, and it's really not in one's best interest to lie as of sorts. Like, lying may get you through one thing, and you may even get through your whole life with just lying again and again. But anyhow, moving on to rule 9.
Rule 9 is assume the person that you are listening to might know something you don't.
Mm-hmm. So this is just like a short rule that just goes over the fact that when you're learning, you have to assume that the other person really knows something. And the fact that you're not the only person who has all the answers and stuff, like Kanye West, but anyhow.
Yeah.
If you get
definitely.
Rule 10.
Be precise in your speech. I actually could relate to this rule, because formulating and articulating speech is one of the most important things a person can learn and should learn in the course of his life. Because if you're precise in your speech, you can command the flow of conversations, right? And if you leave all things vague and foggy, then you never know that one thing is, right? And what's the other? So, right? Everything will blend into something else, and it will be a complex situation, right? So you need to learn to say things that are short, to the point, concise, and conveys your point of view and feelings to the other person, right? Because say what you mean, and this again, it ties back into not lying and the rule about telling the truth, right? Because if you tell the truth, you don't have to fabricate stories. You just have to be concise and straight to the point. And it's you can be precise in your speech much more easily than if you're always telling lies.
Yeah, it really just ties into you translating your thoughts and understanding what the other person says. Because like, if you're precise with your speech, you can make the other person understand where you're coming from and really understand where they're coming from by articulating questions that need to be answered and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Rule 11. Do not bother children when they are skateboarding. Yeah, he starts actually this chapter by describing how children who actually skateboard, they fear nothing, right? They're risk takers and they want to enjoy it. They're the ones that are rebels and they have no fear of falling, right? So in the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, don't be a girly man. They follow that rule. So, and he says that women like men who are in competitive sports, right? Because they're in the topmost hierarchies. And it basically reflects into that. So stopping children when they're skateboarding is like telling them to not pursue something competitive, something that can put them into a much more dominant spot. So, and we emphasize already how important is dominance, right? In rule number one, where you should stand straight with your shoulders back. So you need to be dominant. You need to be in competitive sports, because as a man, that embodies who you are, right?
It's not really just being in competitive sports of sorts. It's just the fact that
the competitive nature of everything, right? Not even in business.
When children are just taking risks, they're really just experiencing the whole thing on by themselves, and like acting as a buffer for them with life. That's really gonna come and haunt them back when they were trying to take the risk, but they had a buffer that was stopping them from consequences that they're not gonna have later in their life, or they might not have in the near future. So it really just goes on to reflect that point. But onwards to the final rule and rule 12.
Pet a cat.
When you encounter one on the street.
Yep. So, he actually goes on to describe dogs first. That was funny.
This chapter is more in tune with altruism of sorts, where he just says that doing random acts of kindness is really beneficial for our mental capabilities, in the sense that
if you encounter a dog or a cat on the street and you take the time to go and pet it, that means that you did something good, right, in life. You did something good that day. So in the midst of your chaos, in your own life, you took the time to do something good.
It really just ties into the fact that one of his philosophies is just going after nihilism, and the fact that a lot of people feel that life is meaningless. He just goes into the fact that you're a network of nodes where your effect can have a lot of big consequences in the world, where if you have an impact on someone, it really creates a chain of impacts that will come back to bite you, and if it doesn't, it's going to make the world a better place.
In the words of Jordan Peterson, your node in a network, it's like dropping a stone in a pond, right? the ripples move outwards. And so that's how you're connected.
And that's where Aurangzeb's memory skills come in.
Okay, then. I think that summed it up.
For our rules of life. Was a good podcast today. Hopefully you got a lot of out of it. See you on the next episode of the Unshakable Principle Podcast.
See ya.